So I'm going to talk about assessment of nitrous oxide and methane emissions from rice-based cropping systems, with much of the emphasis being given to rice. I'm going to talk about two topics in a fairly sort of snapshot perspective, so it won't be comprehensive by any means. It sort of represents some of my own interests and perhaps personal biases. So I'll talk about some of the measurement issues that I see for measuring these gases, and then I'd like to spend a little bit of time discussing some of the trade-offs, or what we know about trade-offs between emissions of methane and nitrous oxide when it comes to trying to mitigate one or the other emissions. I probably don't need to talk about methods, because I'm sure all of you are familiar with the methods. By far, the chamber method is the one that's most widely used, especially, of course, in developing countries. Again, most of these chambers are constructed to work manually, although there are automated chamber methods available, and in fact, one of the first measurements of trade-offs between methane and nitrous oxide was conducted at the International Rice Research Institute by Kevin Bronson, and he used an automatic chamber system for that purpose. As I go through this, I would say that most of the measurements are made with a frequency from 1 day to 7 days intervals between measurements, with maybe 3 days sort of an average value. Obviously, there's some issues associated with that. Typically, measurements are made, replicated to get some assessment of spatial variability. This shows you correct placement of a chamber over a plant and from mid-row to mid-row. Not everybody does it this way, actually, somewhat surprisingly. I chose this photograph not because it's the best kind of chamber. It's a little greenhouse here, but you can see, obviously, the placement over the rice plant. I would also mention that of the literature information that I'll present, that almost all of the flux measurements, well, not almost, all of them pretty much are done with linear regression analyses and rejection of data that is nonlinear. Which sort of struck me as counterintuitive, and I was interested to hear Rod's comments about that. And I think it's particularly an issue for methane, because it does preclude assessment of ebullition events, or bubbles escaping into the chamber, which can create a spike in methane emissions. Of course, for a plant like rice, a substantial amount of methane and nitrous oxide is coming through the parenchyma system of the plant itself, as opposed to diffusion from the soil surface. There are measurement issues, of course, many of them. I've chose to focus on those things that we might miss measuring, and often what really is missed in the measurement practices that are being used. So first of all, diurnal variations in emissions of nitrous oxide and methane, both. Often these, of course, are strongly influenced by changes in temperature over a 24-hour period of time. There can, of course, also be real changes in emissions over a 24-hour period of time, too. Secondly, infrequent measurements obviously are going to lead to as missing short-term emission events, thinking now in terms from hours to, say, a day in time frame. If you have an average measurement every 3 days, then you're going to miss these short-term emission events. And these are actually critical, especially for nitrous oxide. Following management events such as fertilization, tillage, drainage of soils or irrigation of soils. And for methane, of course, it's critical if you go to some sort of mid-season drainage events in a rice production system. As you drain the soils, you can get a release of methane that's been trapped in the soil, and this can occur in a short period of time. And then I also want to talk a little bit about indirect emissions of nitrous oxide associated with movement of nitrogen away from the field, typically through leaching of nitrogen or, in the case of rice, flooded paddy rice, particularly ammonia volatilization from the flood water. I did put in a slide of work that we actually did ourselves back in the 1990s looking at methane flux from an organic rice production farm. This was the Sills Farm. It's a pretty well-known organic production system. It was written up in Time magazine one time in California. And this is showing two treatments. One is it's got a plus nitrogen. It's really not the organic system. It's then with inorganic nitrogen fertilizer to give the same yield as the organic system. These yields were 9 to 10 tons per hectare, by the way. And then the other one is with nitrogen supply through purple vetch incorporated into the soil. And using this to illustrate the fact that the time of day that you make the measurement is important. You can clearly see in the plus N treatment there are differences between a morning and an afternoon sampling. Those differences occurring mostly during the early part of the rice cycle. And these differences are much greater when you go to the organic system with the plus vetch. And they also persist for a long period of time during the growth of the rice. So if you look at the actual emissions quantified by just measuring at each of these two times, you can see that if you measure in the afternoon, you get twice as much as you got in the morning. And also you see that the difference between our, quotes, non-organic and the organic system is also a factor of two. So in our case, what we chose to do was take the mean value of the two, and this itself is probably not completely accurate. I just wanted to put in a little bit about a manual versus automatic chambers, because intuitively you might think with an automatic chamber where you can make as many as two or typically six measurements over a 24-hour period, that this would give you a better value for the flux. And this can be the case in some situations, but not always. And this slide here, which is a little fuzzy, you can see compares the manual method versus the automatic chamber method. And you can see that over a 40-day time period, the manual method gave twice as much emissions of nitrous oxide compared to the automatic chamber method, where measurements were made six times over the course of the day. However, the authors looked into this quite carefully, and they concluded that in this case, the manual method was overestimating the emissions due to sampling in the morning when it was a period of time where the fluxes were higher than the average flux for the 24-hour diurnal cycle. But yet also the automatic chambers underestimated the nitrous oxide flux because they were closed for a significant period of time during the day, and it rained. And so when the chamber was closed, you excluded the rain from reaching the soil surface. So, and that was particularly an issue in that initial peak that you see with the manual method that is absent from the automatic method. So perhaps then both manual and automatic chamber methods have their own advantages and disadvantages, and the automatic one is not necessarily more accurate. I would say that for flooded rice, probably you don't have this issue as much as you have in this data set, which was for wheat following rice. One area that has pretty much been ignored has been leaching of nitrous oxide from paddy rice or from soils in general. Obviously, there's a fair amount of movement through many rice production soils, and nitrous oxide can, dissolved in water, can move out in that way. So this is a paper that actually addressed this issue. It was a study in Japan, a field lysimeter study. The lysimeters were pretty large, 3 meters by 3 meters. It was a very well done study as far as I can tell. And what you can see is that I've divided the data here into emissions from the surface, meaning from the soil plant surface, and then through drainage. And what you can see is that 99% of the emissions of methane are coming from the surface, and only 1% through the drainage water. Whereas, in contrast with nitrous oxide, 75% of the nitrous oxide is coming through the drainage water, and only a quarter from the actual surface measurement. Typically, of course, people are just doing the surface measurement. So this then could lead to a strong underestimation of nitrous oxide emissions from a flooded rice paddy. In this case, if you look at combine the data, 42% of the global warming potential would actually come from nitrous oxide, whereas if you looked at it just based on the surface, it would be a much lower percentage. Also important to understand from this is that the nitrous oxide in the leachate represented 2.8% of the nitrogen that was being leached. And for indirect losses of nitrogen from leached nitrogen, IPCC uses a default value of 0.25%. So in this case, the nitrous oxide actually coming through the soil was much greater in the water than is estimated by IPCC. And the IPCC estimate is really for what happens to nitrogen after it's moved away from the field, not in this case directly coming through in the drainage water. And of course, it's not surprising that nitrous oxide comes through in drainage water because, obviously, in contrast to methane, it is highly soluble in water, and it's fairly comparable, in fact, its solubility is fairly comparable to that of carbon dioxide. So it's not surprising that this is this finding was realized. But I think this is an area where we have a significant gap in almost all of the studies in the literature. Another area for rice is that we have a lot of ammonia emissions from flooded rice paddies often. Up to 50% of the applied nitrogen can be lost this way. Typically, the loss of ammonia occurs early in the rice production cycle. It's associated with open water where algae are growing, consuming CO2, the pH is rising, and of course, ammonium is converted to NH3. And it typically then occurs before there are any drainage strategies that are used to mitigate methane emissions. And really, there's no direct assessment of ammonia loss on nitrous oxide emissions that I'm aware of from rice. So it would be a very difficult undertaking. So I put together some generalizations, and then I'll show you a little bit of data about some of these. About methane and nitrous oxide. For rice, mid-season and or intermittent drainage decreases methane emissions, sometimes substantially, but it increases nitrous oxide emissions. So there's a trade-off there that I'll talk a little bit more about. In general, any additions of organic materials, whether this is crop residue, whether it's a green manure, whether it's an animal manure, whether it's sewage sludge, generally these will lead to more intense reduction, and that applies to both a rice paddy and to an upland system. You would get more intense reduction. So in general, that increases methane fluxes from rice. It does not, however, generally change the nitrous oxide methane emissions from rice, but it generally does increase emissions of nitrous oxide from upland crops, or in the drain crop system, you create more anaerobic microsites where you're adding organic materials. There are quite a few reports that nitrogen fertilizer addition increases methane from rice. Well, yeah, of course it does if you're comparing it to an unfertilized control, but that comparison is pretty much irrelevant as far as I'm concerned. And if you look at effects of fertilizers in terms of type or different fertilizer input levels, there's lots of variations in results showing both increases and decreases and no changes in nitrous oxide emissions. So it's a very complex picture. And in general, of course, though, we know that nitrogen fertilizer additions increase nitrous oxide fluxes from upland crops. These are very general generalizations, and of course, there's always exceptions. I should say that also, more recently, people have been looking at the use of urease and nitrification inhibitors as a means of reducing nitrous oxide from rice, coupled with mid-season drainage. And in fact, there's some pretty promising results from this strategy. However, overall, when you look at the whole literature, what you realize is that the quantitative effects of management on methane and nitrous oxide from rice and rice-based systems are quite variable. And it really is a situation where the devil is in the details, and you have to think carefully about the cropping system, the soil type, the particular management practices, etc. And there's many, many different interactions that come into play. I would also just like to say that if we wish to eliminate residue or organic inputs as a means of reducing methane emissions from rice, we can do this, but this obviously is conflicting with some of our long-term goals for sustainability of our production systems. So there's a conflict there that we should think about. Let me talk a little then about some of these trade-offs between methane and nitrous oxide. I'm going to talk about water management and residue addition effects. First here on what you're seeing is the global warming potential then for N2O and methane coming from rice managed in different ways. So looking first at that 20-year time frame, you can see the methane emission from flooded rice, the F, is much higher than if we put drainage in. And the FDF is a flooded, drained, reflooded with a drainage period of 7 days in this case, after 35 days of growth. And then the FDM treatment is a flooded, drained, and then reflooded, but really trying to keep the soil close to saturation and not actually underwater. I would say the FDM measurements are made a year later than the FDF measurements, and so comparison is not exactly fair, but I think it makes the point that the methane emissions are reduced considerably when there is a mid-season drainage or intermittent drainage, and that as you do that, you also, however, increase some emissions of nitrous oxide. If you try to go to a more moist environment such as the FDM there, it's clear that you're going to increase nitrous oxide and with seemingly not much benefit in terms of reducing methane. So the single mid-season drainage seems to be a good practice. In looking at this, we do also need to think about what is the time frame that we should think about for our assessment. And so I've put in the 100-year time frame, and you can see that if you go to the 100-year time frame, you get sort of a different general picture than you do for the 20-year time frame. In the 20-year time frame, methane is more important. In the 100-year time frame, nitrous oxide becomes more important. So depending on what you really want to achieve in mitigation, we need to think about these time frames. If you put in a lot of residue, or in this case not so much residue, but wheat straw, here it's only about 2.5 tons per hectare. What you can see is the scale here is 2.5 times more than in the left-hand panels. So there's much more greenhouse gases coming, and that is predominantly methane. So where you put methane residues in your system, you're affecting the production of methane much more than nitrous oxide. I just also want to point out that if you have rotational systems, rice doesn't always necessarily dominate. So here's a rice, winter wheat, cotton, three-crop rotation, and the overall result in the right-hand bar, you can see that nitrous oxide is a little more important than methane. If you had actually a rice-wheat system, just looking at the emissions for rice and wheat, you would see that rice would, in fact, dominate that. In this case, cotton was a system that was producing all, as much GWP as rice. So just to finish with conclusions, direct measurements of methane from soil plant surfaces is fine for in terms of quantification. It's not so fine for nitrous oxide. Need to consider these indirect emissions and make pay much more attention to that, especially when we're trying to evaluate trade-offs between methane and nitrous oxide. And really, management options to mitigate methane and nitrous oxide emissions need to be adjusted or adapted to individual cropping systems, to soils, and other environmental and management circumstances. Thank you.